And thank you all for coming here this evening. Very glad to be back, and I'd like to thank Professor Kevin Featherstone for giving me the opportunity to pay back my dues through this grueling experience of question and answers, which I'll go through tonight. No, I think it'll be a pleasure to be with you and discuss with you and hear what you have to say and to ask on some very interesting issues which we, both in Greece but around the world, are facing. But I'd like to thank the Hellenic Observatory for the very important work that it has been conducting over the years, since it was founded in 1996. During that period of time, I was also a minister and supported, and I do continue to support the work, and particularly now, during critical developments in Greece, I believe that the Hellenic Observatory can make a very important contribution, not only to understanding what Greece is today, but also in finding and proposing ideas and solutions for Greece of tomorrow. So again, I assure you my full support for your future work. If you watch Greek television, you will come across hundreds of ads for mobile, telephone, and internet services. One of these ads kept on reminding me of my years here at LSE. It uses a jingle from a group I used to listen to in the 70s called 10 Years After. The refrain of the song goes like this: I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do, so I'll leave it up to you. If there's one message I would like you to take home tonight, it is this: don't leave your fate up to some higher force. Don't leave your fate up to some leader who promises you heaven on earth or preaches salvation. Does this mean I'm saying don't trust anything or anyone? A nihilistic message about the world, our societies, our politics? Now, my message is a message of optimism. What I'm saying is simply, we cannot wait. We must act today to restore trust. To restore trust in our democratic institutions, confidence in our political systems, restore solidarity and security to our societies, our neighbors, our citizens, so that we can take on the major global, national, or local challenges we face. I'm certainly not here to make grandiose promises. I'm here to say that we can and we must change our world. And I'm here to ask you, whether you are a Greek or whether you are a citizen from another corner of this world, to participate in our common project. Because although I used to have a head of dark hair, I today share the frustration of our younger generation. And I'm lucky to also have two good advisors, my son Andreas and my daughter Margarita, who is here and studying in London, who are both of university age. And traveling around the world, but also seeing the potential my country has, but is being wasted, I know the frustration of the younger generation. Only a few months ago, as Professor Featherstone said, thousands of young Greeks took to the streets to express their frustration with our political system. And there are plenty of reasons for young Greeks to despair. During the last 5 years, the New Democracy government, the neoconservative government, has brought the economy to the brink of collapse and paralyzed progress on all fronts. Like so many Greeks, I feel both sorrow and outrage for my country. A country where only 5 years ago people were confident and optimistic about their future. A country that hosted one of the safest, the most hospitable Olympic Games ever. A country that had joined the Eurozone was playing a crucial role for peace, democracy, stability in the Balkans, had developed a new relationship of hope with its historical rival, Turkey, had been instrumental in Cyprus's accession to the European Union, and had boosted membership prospects for other Southeast European countries. Today, Eurostat classifies Greece as one of the most pessimistic nations and peoples in the European Union. We have a job market where political patronage and cronyism deprive graduates of decent jobs and prospects. 1 in 4 young people are unemployed. Parents crippled by debt must work 2 or 3 jobs to support their families. 1 in 5 Greeks are now living below the poverty line. Greek families pay more than any other European for their health and education out of their own money. Public spending on education accounts for just 3% of the GDP, the lowest in the Eurozone. We have an academic system that suffocates the aspirations of a dynamic youth, promotes boring and uninspiring rote learning, does not connect with the needs of our economy. And I also hear many younger Greeks saying, well, maybe we should leave our country and find a better future outside, something which we only heard maybe 40 years ago and before then, when we did have mass migration. Underlying all these social and economic problems is also an overwhelming sense that we don't have the rule of law, but the rule of the powerful. A sense of corruption, a sense of inequality, a sense that our political system has been captured, and that many resources, whether they are human or natural resources, are being squandered. This is not the real Greece. Even the vast majority of demonstrators in Greece were not the violent militants you may have seen on television. They were ordinary people from all walks of life who took to the streets to peacefully protest social injustice and a state of corruption. And there is a simple question, but also a frustrating paradox that we, not only in Greece, but throughout the world, are facing. Humanity is facing. For the first time in human history, we have the knowledge, the technology, the wealth to design a different world. Yes, there is poverty, but we have the capacity to make poverty history. Our globe is overheating, but we can reduce carbon emissions by investing in renewable energy and innovative alternative technologies. We have high unemployment, but we can create decent work or future prospects through training for all. With only a few billion dollars or euros a year, we could achieve universal literacy. With cheap $100 or maybe a few more dollars laptops, we could bridge the digital divide. With the monies that we are now putting into rescue the banks or to retired failed bankers, we could easily provide decent health care and a viable pension system for all. If we produced cheaper medicine, put our resources together, our heads together, our governments together, we could stop pandemics, which may be emblematic of what globalization can bring, such as HIV, AIDS, malaria, or even swine flu. So the slogan, "Yes, we can," is not a hollow slogan. It is possible to change the world. The goal of more just, safe, and sustainable societies is no longer beyond our reach. So why haven't we succeeded? Why haven't we fulfilled, for example, the United Nations Millennium Development Goals adopted in 2000 by all governments in the United Nations. And these goals are in no way revolutionary. And with the recent crisis, we have seen that when there is a will, money can be found, and lots of it. But is it going to social protection, education, development, green development, alternative energy, debt relief? Well, there may be many reasons why our systems have failed us, but I would propose that we need a radical democratization of the way we govern our world, our resources, our societies. We need to make our politics more responsive, more accountable, more representative, more participative, to guarantee that people do come first. With the crash of the two walls, the Berlin Wall some years ago and the Wall Street only a few months ago, we have seen that we need a radical and democratic rethink of governance in the world. Both communism and neoliberalism have failed us. These two world, two Cold War dogmas, which were supposedly designed to serve the people, ended up propping up political systems which transferred both wealth and power to an elite minority. Yes, inequality of wealth and inequality of political power is at the core of today's crisis. It is not simply an economic crisis. It is deeply a political one. Both Paul Krugman, the Nobel laureate, and Kenneth Sokoloff have written extensively about how inequality, how the neoconservative economic policies recently have stifled social progress and corrupted democracy. According to Sokoloff, who wrote very much about Latin America, he says that as these inequalities persist, elites are able to institutionalize an unequal distribution of political power. In his recent book, Paul Collier describes how weak democratic institutions, particularly in African nations, rich in oil or diamonds, are captured by multinationals, which in turn corrupt leadership in these countries. And rather than these countries rich in resources becoming rich societies and prosperous societies, they become societies of conflict, misery, and poverty. But this is not just an African, an Asian, or a Latin American problem. I would propose that this is also a problem for our developed democracies. This is also a problem for global governance. The recent collapse of Wall Street indeed revealed that we do not have a free market system, but in fact we have a global, non-transparent collusion of powerful business, media, sometimes military, or even mafia, as Misha Glennie would tell us, to concentrate wealth and power in the hands of the few. The Nobel Prize-winning economist Joe Stiglitz has called this unholy alliance of business and government welfare corporatism. I, coming from my Greek experience, would call it clientelistic capitalism. And I believe my former LSE professor, Nikos Mouzalis, would like this term, as he has written much about clientelism in Latin America. Buying favors, buying off politicians, buying off voters, undermining the independence of the checks and balances of our democratic institutions, parliament, our justice system. Yes, the huge unequal distribution of power and wealth is threatening our democratic institutions today, threatening them through corruption and through captivating them through special interests. And this in turn has meant that we have wasted our resources, squandered our environmental resources, our human capacity, we have not planned according to the needs of our peoples. And this has brought insecurity, polarization, sometimes violence around the world, but certainly the crisis which we are living through these days. And this, I pretend, is because your voice, our voice, is not duly represented in our global and national political system today. It's no wonder our citizens, no wonder our younger generation, are skeptical, if not even cynical. This is why we need a radical democratic change. For the people, by the people, of the people. So the essence of the socialism or social democracy I espouse today is not based on any dogma or some final solution. It is based on the need for society that respects values and principles. And I would identify three overarching principles. First, the need to rejuvenate our democracies and to create participative societies. Second, social solidarity, just distribution of wealth. And third, sustainable development for a green economy. As the largest political organization in the world, with 170 member parties in all five continents, the Socialist International can unite the world's citizens around a new global agenda to achieve these goals. We are already engaged in a deliberative process to set in motion a new model of economic governance. Last September, just after the crisis broke out, we set up a commission on global financial issues, chaired by Joe Stiglitz, and comprised of political leaders, ministers, and experts from around the world. We are not opposed to globalization, but we are determined to humanize globalization. To this end, we are calling for the Washington Consensus to be replaced by a new global consensus built on sustainable development and solidarity. We have outlined a roadmap with concrete proposals for a new global and political architecture. I'd be happy to elaborate on our proposals in the Q&A session later. But coming back to Greece, the problem of good governance is central to the widespread social and economic problems we are facing. That is why in PASOK we have launched a series of reforms to ensure that our decision-making process is more inclusive, our institutions are transparent, and our leaders accountable. We have also outlined five national goals, which we think are of the highest priority for the future of Greece. First, to reestablish an active Greek foreign policy that will promote democracy, stability, economic development in the Balkans and beyond, our wider neighbor. Our active participation in the European affairs must be restored. Secondly, deep reforms of our educational system with the necessary investment in human capital. We have said we need to invest at least 5% of GDP in our educational system. Third, reforms of our tax, social welfare, and health system to restore both equity and to create efficient systems. Fourth, a transition, a major radical, if you like, transition towards a green economy, from tourism to agriculture, from energy to transportation, from construction to education. We should move our economy, our citizens, to become a leader in this area around the world. But fifth, and not least, we cannot do all this if we do not have the courage to make major changes in our political system. Democratizing our heavily centralized, patronage-oriented public bureaucracy, fighting corruption and nepotism. And our principles for democratic governance are, first of all, transparency. We say every single documents signed by a Greek minister or high public official will be made public online, as an example. Secondly, accountability as to where public money goes. Third, meritocracy in public service and a constant evaluation of government achievements. Fourth, inclusiveness through public deliberation and participation in policymaking. My goal, which I know is an ambitious one, is to make Greece a model of democratic governance. From today's citizens who feel marginalized, isolated, and abandoned to their fate by a corrupt state, we want to move to a citizen with rights and responsibilities, a citizen who also actively participates in the demos and is no longer alienated from work, his or her neighborhood, his city. I envision a Greece where every citizen contributes to the creation of a sustainable and inclusive society. So my invitation tonight is to you to participate in our quest for a democratic change. In Greece and in solidarity around the world, we must neither give in to fatalism nor search for a new dogma or a new fundamentalism or absolutism or new authoritarian leaders holding out promises. This would only lead to more violence and misery. We need to strengthen our democratic culture and institutions. The word democracy, as you know, in Greek means the rule of the demos, or the people. But we need to go one step further, using new technologies, such as social networks, our interactive and collaborative tools, creating a deliberative democracy, our web tools. I see Anthony here somewhere, we've talked about this very often, Anthony Burnett, working on an open democracy and how we should deliberate more through the internet, so that we can become, as we would say in Greek, dimiurgi. Dimiurgos in Greek means someone who creates, a creator. Literally, it means demos and ergo. In fact, the work of the people. So let us all participate and become creators of tomorrow's world. This is today's democratic challenge for the world and for Greece. Thank you very much.